I'm sorry, just the recorder went off, so I'm just trying to... The wind came and blew away the rain clouds, because even when the skies are bright, if you're not paying attention to the Torah, that's the punishment. Omar Rabbi Ami, Ein Hagshamim Netzarim Ela Ba'avon Gezel. Here's another opinion, that drought is a punishment specifically for thievery. When people are not careful about other people's property, it's because of gezel. Shnei Amar al kapayim kisa or. This pasuk from Iyov. I mentioned last week in constructing this string of agadot. Whoever did it must have been drawing heavily. He must have had Iyov open on his desk, because there's an excessive percentage of quotes from Iyov. But here, the pasuk from Iyov, al kapayim kisa'or, that he covers his hands with light. So ba'avon kapayim kisa'or, that the sin of the hands, is theft. We might say in English, the sin of the sticky fingers. So the sin of the hands, God covers the light and no rain falls. Meaning, like, the heavens get blocked because of the sin of the thieving hands. Ve'en kapayim ela chamas. The word kapayim, means palms, hands. Kapayim is a code word, says the Gemara, for chamas. Chamas is a kind of set of, like, unspecified averot. You remember, of course, in the Dor HaMabul, the Torah said the flood by Noah described it as a generation that was full of chamas. And it's not completely clear what that chamas is, but Rashi brings a variety of options. Among them is this idea of thievery, that the generation was particularly guilty of that sin. So ein chamas ve'ein kapayim el chamas shne'emar u'min hechamas asher bekapehem. Right, that's in Yonah. That, in other words, Yonah connects this idea of chamas, which is some kind of violence against property, violence against people's bodies, violence of speech, are the options that are given by the Midrash. But the violence is in their hands, right? They have it, like we might say in English, they wear it on their sleeves. So there you have the idea that chamas and kapayim, which is on your hands, will cover the light, will block the heavens, so therefore the rain won't come. Ve'ein or ela matar shne'emar yafitz anan oro. That also a pasuk in Iyov, that he shoots forth the cloud of his light. Hashem shoots forth the cloud of his light. So you see this idea that kapayim blocks or. And what's or? Or, earlier we had said or is a synonym for Torah. But apparently or is also a synonym for for rain, as we see in the pasuk in Iyov. Because rain is the thing that kind of shoots down from the heaven. You might have also thought that it meant, what would be another interpretive possibility? If not rain. Actually, what would be a more plausible possibility? Yafitz anan oro. The cloud shoots forth. I might have thought it meant lightning. And the lightning, after all, is or. But the Gemara says it means it's a code word for rain, just like or is a code word for Torah. Maita kanta. Now the Gemara introduces a new element, which is going to, again, keep repeating throughout these passages. Okay, so if you have a generation that is fraught with thievery, and because of that, there's no rain, There's a drought. So what's the remedy? Mai takanta? What's the way to fix it? Yarbe bitzfila. So you should daven, right? You should increase the amount of your prayers. That's the remedy for that kind of drought caused by thievery. Shne'emar vitzav aleha b'mafgi'a. Vitzav aleha b'mafgi'a, that Hashem will command it because of the mafgi'a. Now, what's mafgi'a? What's a pega? Right? What's a pgi'a? If you're driving down the street and somebody smashes into your car, you say, "Hu pagabi." He knocked into me. Right? So, Chazal understood that this word pgi'a, pei gimel ayin, means to kind of like entreaty, to beg, to implore Hashem through prayer. Because it's kind of like we're knocking into Hashem, we're smashing into, we're throwing our tefillot up to Hashem. So what's the pasuk? Ein vitzav aleha b'mafkia. Hashem will give the command, meaning he will reverse the drought when there is pgi'a. Ve'ein pgi'a ela tefila. Shne'emar va'ata al titpalel ba'ad hamazeh v'chule. Va'al tifga bi. Right? It's an interesting pasuk to learn about prayer from. It's a pasuk from Yirmiyahu, where Hashem is saying, don't pray to me. Va'al tifga bi. Do not encounter me. And since the main principal encounter between the Jewish people and God is through prayer, Hashem says, al tifga bi. It's like saying, al titpalel elai. Don't pray to me. Right? And as he's saying, look, Yirmiyahu is saying, Hashem is saying through Yirmiyahu, you people are sinners. And you're all so worried that the Beit HaMikdash is going to be destroyed. You're going to be sent into exile. Terrible things are going to happen to you. Enough with your davening. I don't want to hear you. I'm sick of it. I don't want to hear another word of davening. You know what you should do? You should go and act properly with each other. So it's a curious pasuk to learn out an essential fact about tefillah from a pasuk in which Hashem is rejecting our tefillot. But nevertheless, from this pasuk, Chazal learn that the word that the root pe gimel ayin is a code word for prayer. Now, you all know that line from a different Gemara. What's the main source for that idea that this pasuk va'al tifga bi means do not pray?
In Brachot, we're talking about Arvit and Yaakov.
Yeah, in other words, in Brachot, Brachot has this idea that we learned it together. Brachot has this idea that that the tefillot avot tiknum, that the prayers were instituted by the forefathers. Avraham instituted shacharit, Yitzchak mincha, and Yaakov ma'ariv. The only problem is that there's nowhere in the Torah you can point to that says v'yakam Avraham baboker v'hitpalel shacharit. So what does it say? I'm sorry, I don't have it on the screen. But I have it in the Gemara. No, that's Yaakov. That's Yaakov for Arvit.
V'yashkem Avram Baboker?
V'yashkem Avram Baboker. V'yalin Sham. And the Gemara says, Ein lina ela tfila. This is the post, it's the second Amud in Tfilat HaShachar. It's Dav Kav Vav Amud Beis in Brachot. So the Gemara says, no, I'm sorry. V'yashkem Avram baboker el hamakom asher amad sham ve'ein amida ela tfila. It doesn't say that Avram prayed. It says he stood there, right? And what is standing? So the Gemara says the word standing, amad, is a code word for davening. That makes a lot of sense to us, since after all, what do? We daven the Amida. And then it brings a pasuk from Tehillim where the word Amida is obviously, clearly, much more explicitly tefillah. V'ya'amod Pinchas v'palel. Pinchas stood up and prayed. And then it says, oh, okay, so Yitzchak daven mincha. But the problem is there's no pasuk that says, V'yetze Yitzchak litpalel basadeh. It says Vayetze Yitzchak Lasuach Basadeh. Right? We had that last week. Vayetze Yitzchak Lasuach Basadeh Lifnot Erev. Now Avraham did it Vyashkem Avraham Babokir. So obviously, what davening did daven in the morning? That's Shacharit. Yitzchak does it Lifnot Erev, before sunset. What tefillah is that? Obviously, it's Mincha. So what is it? What's the problem? It doesn't say he davened. It says he lasuach basadeh, to speak in the field, to converse in the field, to meditate in the field, right? So that's obviously mincha, and we have to bring a proof text that sicha ein sicha ela tefillah. And Yaakov hitpalel tefillat arvit. Yaakov tiken tefillat arvit shneemar v'yifka b'makom v'yalin shav. Ve'ein pigia ela tefillah shneemar. And the same pasuk from Yirmiyahu that the Gemara quotes here. So you see that the Gemara understands that these are all coded words in the Tanakh. That these are all coded words in the Tanakh, and if you know how to decode them, so then you can make sense of it. So v'yitzav aleha b'mafgia means that Hashem will cancel the decree of drought when you encounter Him through prayer. So ma'itakanta. What's the solution to a drought? You should daven. So this is halacha lamaaseh. I mean, so far so good in terms of rain this season, but if there hadn't yet been rain, we would already be nervous, and we would start soon probably saying that long paragraph that you have to add to the Amidah, which, you know, makes davening longer. And since people are willing to do anything not to make davening longer, you know, including tshuva, right? You know, there's like a Yiddish expression like this. That's like the power of the Yetzer Hara, right? The Yetzer Hara is even willing to do mitzvahs if it can help him get his way. So, like, we'd be prepared to do tshuva so that Hashem would send rain so we don't have to have a longer davening. Right? It's easier to do tshuva than to spend an extra 5 minutes davening. So we do that. Prayer, even today, is a response to drought. Ve'ein p'gia la tefillah shneimar. Va'omar Rabbi Ami, my dichtiv. Rabbi Ami says, what's this? It's a pasuk in Kohelet. Now we're going to come back to this pasuk a number of times over the next few lines. Im keha habarzel velhu lo panim kilkel. The literal meaning of the pasuk is, if the barzel, if the iron is kahe, is blunted, like if you have a knife, if you have an iron knife or a sword, and the knife becomes kahe, becomes blunt, and you don't velhu lo panim kilkel. And the literal meaning is the panim, the surface, the edge of the knife. The edge of the knife is also called the panim, right? You know, literally the face. So if you don't kilkel, here kilkel means to whet. Not wet, W-E-T, but W-H-E-T. The English word whet, W-H-E-T, means to sharpen. Right, it has nothing to do with the fact that you know, if you have a sharpening stone, what do you call that? Not a sharpening stone.
Also called a whetstone.
Oh, a whetstone. W H E T. It has nothing to do with the fact that sometimes you're supposed to make the stone wet with water. W E T. Right. The word wet completely not. There's no etymological connection to the word W E T. Means to sharpen. If we say that something whet your appetite, right? That means it was an appetizer. Like, what's an appetizer? An appetizer is something that's meant to, right? It's meant to arouse your appetite. It's supposed to make you hungry. You eat a little something and it makes you more hungry, which is different than the expression to whet your whistle, right? Because you can whet an appetite and you can whet your whistle, right? You walk into the saloon and Rosie behind the bar says, "What I get you, Tex?" You say, "I want to wet my whistle." That's W-E-T, meaning I want my dry mouth should become moist with a nice glass of sarsaparilla. But to whet your appetite means to heighten or sharpen your appetite. That's W-H-E-T. The two completely separate words, but these are common mistakes in terms of like how you might spell it if you were asked to write, you know, a script for Gunsmoke or something. It's not still on the air, is it? No, I don't think so. But I'm talking to a crowd of people that, you know what I'm... Catch the reference. the other day I was teaching something wearing my other hat. I have this habit where sometimes I'll teach the same thing twice in close proximity, but to very different audiences. So I teach in a midrashah to 18-year-old girls. And I was also teaching something for Beit Agnon on Zoom. And, you know, frankly, who comes to hear a lecture in the middle of the day on Beit Agnon? Not 18-year-olds. And in passing, I had to explain, when I taught the 18-year-old girls, I had to explain what it meant to set type. You know, like printing. You know, like the printer would take the frame and they would set the letters in type, right? And, you know, basically how printing used to work. And they had absolutely no idea what I was talking about, right? They had absolutely no idea what I was talking about. And then I was teaching the same thing to a group of people who were all, you know, certainly 60 and above. And I started explaining it and I said, wait a second. I don't have to explain to you. You know what I'm talking about. It's a pleasure. I saved 10 minutes. I didn't need to go off on that tangent. So the pasuk here is, Im kaheh barzel v'hu lo panim kilkel. It's a kind of expression. It means that the knife is blunt and we have no way to sharpen it. Right? Think of the similar pasuk in Kohelet, Me'uvat lo yachol litkon v'cheseron lo yachol lihmanot. Right? There are certain things, Me'uvat lo yachol litkon. There are certain things that if it's broken, you can't fix it. Right? If you don't have a sharpening stone, you have no way to sharpen your blunt knife. So panim kilkel means to the blade of the knife to sharpen. But these words, panim, of course, has many different meanings. I mean, most literally, face. And kilkel certainly sounds like the word to ruin or to mess up. So the Gemara will be playing off of these, you know, different interpretive possibilities in the drash of the pasuk beyond the Pshat, which I've just explained. So, imke barzel im ra'ita rakia shekeha ke barzel milahurid talu matar. If you should see if you should see that the sky is as blunt as iron, meaning the sky is va'atzarat hashamayim v'lo yeh matar, right? The heavens are as locked up as an iron box, and no rain is falling. B'shvil maseh hador shehein mikul kalin. Why does the drought come? Because of the kilkul. Here's the play on words of the pasuk. The kilkul, the messed up, the broken, the degenerate generation. Shneemar v'hu lo panim kilkel. Right? They don't. The panim. Panim can mean. Like the Pnei Hador. The Pnei Hador is like the leadership, right? So since the leadership is all Mikul Kal, if you don't have proper leaders, so then that will cause people to sin, and that sin will lead to drought. Naita Kanta. So how could they do tshuva? Right? Maita Kanta. Yitgabru berachamim. They should have more. Rachamim is a synonym for tefillah, right? Yitgabru berachamim probably means I mean, I guess you could think it means they should do more acts of kindness, more acts of mercy, more acts of charity, but it probably means they should daven more. Here, rachamim in the sense of prayer. Shne'emar, and here's another pasuk which we'll keep coming back to, v'chayalim yegaber v'yitron hachsher chokhma.
It's the same pasuk. It's the continuation.
It's the continuation of the same pasuk. Right. V'chayalim yegaber, that the strength should increase. Chayal here meaning strength. But since the word chayal can mean different things, including soldier and other possibilities, that's why the Gemara will keep playing with it. V'yitron hachsher chokhma, how would you translate that pasuk? V'yitron hachsher chokhma, that the wisdom, the value of wisdom makes you straight, makes you kosher, makes you proper, right? You have to, the puzzle, it's a little convoluted. Yitaron hachsher chokhma, right? The value added of wisdom is that you become kosher, you know what to do. Kol shekein im huchsharu ma'aseihem yikara. How much more so if their actions, if the actions of that generation are proper from the beginning, right? In other words, if you sin, if the generation sins so they can daven and that will increase their strength and wisdom will cause them to know what to do. V'kal v'chomer, if they know what to do from the beginning. Reish Lakish, Shama. You remember Reish Lakish? We talked about Reish Lakish last week. What does it?
I was going to say. I think that the pshat of the pasuk in Kohelet is that if you have a dull axe or a dull, you know, whatever, and you didn't sharpen it, then that's the first half in the previous mention, and then you have to exert more strength to be able to use it because it's dull. Therefore, and what's the lesson from this? That a smart person will have sharpened his axe before he used it. That's the yitaron of chokhmah, because he would have used the wisdom before to properly sharpen it. And then the nimshal, the mashal is that it's if you didn't act properly and therefore you have to. There's no rain, then you have to work hard and daven. But if you were smart and like, then you use the
you wouldn't have gotten into the
right beginning. Then you wouldn't have to get the situation where the rain would have in the first place. It's like your axe is sharp; you wouldn't have to work so hard.
Right. Chacham ein ev barosho. If you don't sin, then you don't have to bother yourself doing tshuva. So Reish Lakish, Amar. You have a disadvantage here because you're in the middle of writing a book about Kohelet. So these things are easy for you. You're the guy who sharpened his knife in advance.
There you go.
Reish Lakish Amar. You remember Reish Lakish? We spoke about Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan last week. Reish Lakish Amar, Im Ra'ita Talmid. Hold on, change the page. Top of Chet Omer Aleph. Im ra'ita talmid limudo kasher lav kebarzel. If you see a student, you see a yeshiva bocher, and learning is hard for him. It's as hard for him as iron. Now, the Gemara is picking up on this theme of iron. You see a student whose learning is as hard as iron. B'shvil mishnato she'ena stura alav, because either the Mishnah, literally, Mishnah with a capital M, is not laid out for him. Because remember, in the days when the Torah Sheba Al Peh was Baal Peh, you had to keep a lot of things straight in your head. So if the learning is not organized, straight out, clear in his head, Shne'emar v'hu lo panim kilkel, the same pasuk, meaning, like here, you might say, like panim on the face of things, right? You know, like the way that you might like organize all your learning. So like on the face of things, it's all clear and ordered and organized. So Maitakante, what, how can he fix his learning? You know, like a student who's really struggling, what can he do to get out of his pickle? Yarbe b'yeshiva. He should, I mean, literally, he should sit more. So Rashi says that yarbe b'yeshiva means, hold on, wait, let's look at the Rashi. Oh, hold on. You know, yarbe b'yeshiva. Shiyasdiru b'nei ha'yeshiva mishnatam. That the other yeshiva students, meaning his friends, his chavrusas, his chabura, they should lay out, they should map out all of their learning. Shneemar v'chayalim bein talmidim shehein chayalot. Right? The strength of the students, the strength of the students, of course, are compared to soldiers. The students, you know, to Talmidei Chachamim are sometimes compared to gladiators. But just like the soldiers march like in a line or march in rather in formation. So part of mastering, part of making mastery in learning is making seder, right? Is making order. Right, of your knowledge. This was particularly true in a time when you had to create some kind of taxonomy of knowledge in your head to keep all of that material memorized. But even today, it's you know, the difference, the mark between a student who can really stay on top of things and can take, you know, the difference between knowledge and wisdom, right? Wisdom is the act of synthesizing knowledge. But in order to do that, you need to have all your ducks in a row. You need to have, you know, some kind of mastery of where in your head you're keeping everything. Some kind of mnemonic system or some kind of memory system by which you are, you know, taking in the information. That's part of the problem of schooling and learning today, because, you know, because of this, you know, since we, you know, we have the collected wisdom of human civilization at our fingertips. Like, we don't need to know things anymore. I mean, beyond the fact that Cliff and Norm now have no longer, you know, any need to go to the bar, because there's nothing to argue about. You know, there's no debate about, you know, who won the third game of the World Series in 1962, because, you know, you don't need to keep those facts, those trivial pursuits in your head, since it's all immediately available to us. We've outsourced the need for all trivia, but we've also outsourced the need for all knowledge, because so if you don't have it, you know, if you have it all outsourced, you know, on a phone or on a computer, and it's not living inside the great computer of your head, so your mind isn't going to make those connections. But for the pre-internet scholar, and certainly for the Amora in the days of the, or the Tana, no, or the Amora in the days of the Gemara, the need to make order in your knowledge was essential. So Rashi says, what does it mean, yarbe b'yeshiva? You should increase yeshiva. It means like you should spend more time in yeshiva amongst the b'nei ha-yeshiva. And the b'nei ha-yeshiva will help you know, get in line. You'll march in line with the other boys in the yeshiva. You'll march in formation, and that will help your learning get into formation. Others say yarbe b'yeshiva means no, you should, the exact opposite. You should, you know, be like you know, the metaphorical nail stuck into the bench of the yeshiva, of the matmid, of Bialik's matmid, you know, who never moves, who's stuck in the yeshiva. I mean, I knew people like this in yeshiva. They went places. I knew a guy who, you know, in YU, who, you know, I don't know how he graduated college. He did, but he never left the Beit Midrash. He was there. He would sleep in the Beit Midrash, meaning he would learn all night until he couldn't go anymore, and he'd fall asleep, you know, at his desk, and he'd wake up and, you know, at some point later and keep going. So others, I think the Meiri says that's what it means, Yarbeh B'Yeshiva. Sit, Sitzfleisch, as we say in Yiddish. Just don't move. Just keep, if learning is hard for you, learn more. Sit more. Do more. Shnei Mar, how do you know that? That the yeshiva is the solution to trouble in learning? V'chayalim yegaber v'yitaron hachsher chokhma. Do more. Increase your strength. Kol shekein im mishnato stura lo mi'ikara. And how much more so is learning going to be easier if your learning is kind of organized and chad v'chalak from the beginning? Ki ha darish lokish hava masader matnita arbo'in zimnin keneged arbo'in yom shenitna Torah v'ayel akame d'Rabbi Yochanan. When Reish Lakish, you remember the story of Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish is this bandit and he's brought close to Torah through Rabbi Yochanan, who's first his teacher and then his colleague. But in the period when Reish Lakish was the student and Rabbi Yochanan was the master, Reish Lakish would prepare 40 times before he would go to Rabbi Yochanan. Now, whether that means, like, if he had a question for his Rebbe, he would review all the material 40 times before he went and asked. Or he would prepare, you know, the way that people prepare before they go to shiur, right? You know, like you fellas do, before we start the shiur, you've looked over the Gemara ahead of time. So Rabbi Yochanan, Reish Lakish, would go over the Amud 40 times before he'd check into the Zoom shiur with Rabbi Yochanan. Reish Lakish would go over it 40 times. Why 40 times? Because 40 is the symbolic number of the 40 days that it took Moshe to receive the Torah. And Rav Ada Bar Ava Mesader Matnite Esrin Va'arba Zimnin. He would review the Mishnah 24 times. Now, maybe this means in the days when the Mishnah was still an oral teaching, and you would go to Shiur, and you would be expected to recite. You would be expected to have the Mishnah at the ready, press play, and there it is. So he would do it. I remember when I was a kid, we would have to learn poetry by heart, right? In school, in first grade, we had to memorize Longfellow's poem, The Village Blacksmith. Under the spreading chestnut tree, the village smithy stands. The smith, the mighty man, is he with large and sinewy hands and arms as strong as iron bands. And I once knew the whole poem Baal Peh, first grade. I mean, now there's no school that, I don't think, there's no school that does that. But in the days of old, learning things by memory was a matter of great importance. It was the mark of a cultured person. You know, just like in the days of old, before technology, it was a mark of a cultured person to be able to play a musical instrument. Because in order to enjoy music, in order to listen to music, you had to be able to play music. There was no phonograph. There was no iTunes. There was no, you know, 8-track cassette, right? If you wanted to listen to music in the evening, somebody had to sit at the piano and play. And that was a mark. So it was a mark of a cultured person to possess inside of him certain key texts of Western literature. You'd have to know how to recite a soliloquy from Shakespeare. It had to be stored inside. We've lost something by not having that. So that was certainly true with the Mishnah. So Rav Ada and Reish Lakish, they would memorize whatever the Mishnayot were that they were going to be reviewing in the Shiur that day. 40 times for the 40 days on Har Sinai, 24 times for the, as a symbolic number for the 24 books of Tanakh, before he would go off to the
Shiur. Is there any discussion, I mean, just in general, about how it might have actually been easier to memorize that corpus of, you know, all of Jewish thought when there was a lot less? I mean, in order to have a Gemara, and they barely had the Mishnah, so, you know, you could say, like, it was difficult, but in a way, and there was a lot less, so yeah, I'm wondering if it was, like, maybe, it was a lot easier to remember these things when all there was the Mishnah.
But give it a try. I remember when I was in yeshiva, when I came here to the Bravender's yeshiva, of my Rebbe, my Rebbe, quoting a Mishnah in Avot, okay, asking a question and saying, what is it? I don't remember what it was. I'm making up the case because I don't remember the specific Mishnah that he was talking about. But he said, well, obviously, the Torah stands on three things. And we were 18-year-old kids. We were like, what? So he said, it's a Mishnah in Avot. It's a Mishnah at the beginning of Avot. Torah, Avodah Gamil Chasadim. So he couldn't believe that we didn't know that Mishnah Baal Peh. Right? I mean, for many of us, we'd only started Jewish learning not much earlier. I remember him saying, the one thing that I do remember is him saying, a Jew should know Pirkei Avot Baal Peh. And it struck me as just such like an outlandish idea that somebody could memorize all of Pirkei Avot. Right? So even that task of memorizing all of Pirkei Avot, one perek of Pirkei Avot seems to us impossible. So it's true that, we have the tech, printing, of course, itself is a technology. So we have the technology where we've outsourced part of our memory, but we should be able to do something. Like, you should know certain things, Baal Peh. How many tefillot do I say every single day? It happens that I don't have a particular, I have a pretty good memory, Baruch Hashem. But it's not a verbatim memory. I can remember ideas. I can remember the connections of ideas. Like I can remember, let's say, a Dvar Torah or a Drasha that I gave many years ago. But I can't remember, there's just the idea of verbatim memory is not perfect. Like let's say Psukei Dezimra. Right, those five, like even just the five central mizmorim of Psukei Dezimra after Ashrei. Those are things you say every single day, every single day of the Jewish year, right? It's not like certain tefillot which are skipped at sometimes, and you say them every single day. At least when you're not rushing, you say those five mizmorei tehillim. Is it possible to know them baal peh? Yeah. I mean, we all know Ashrei Baal Peh. I mean, even in Yiddish, there's that expression, to know something like Ashrei, means like you know it like the back of your hand. Because you say Ashrei three times. Who doesn't know Ashrei? And it's also easier because it's a mnemonic. But isn't it possible to know all five Mizmor? I don't think, I couldn't recite those five Mizmor in Baal Peh, even though I've said them every single day for the past, going on 35 plus years. Because I just thought my memory doesn't work that way. But Chazal did. They were able to memorize Mishnayot. But in order to do it, they involved this review. Reish Lakish would review the material 40 times before he would go into Shir. This, of course, is reminiscent of a different Gemara that says, Eina Doma Misha Shashina Pirko Mea Pa'amim Mea Ve'chad Pa'amim. Right? That, in other words, if you're reviewing the material, if you're reviewing the Mishnah, the 101st time is qualitatively better than the 100th time. You'd think after you've done it 100 times, you've got it. No, each time is of value. I remember once hearing an interview with the great pianist Vladimir Horowitz. Horowitz was this virtuoso. He was Toscanini's son-in-law. He was really the greatest performance artist, of his age. And in the interview, they were asking him about, he was already an old man, and they were asking him about the new generation of pianists. So he was praising them. He said, oh, they're all very good. They do creative stuff. They have a lot of raw talent. But the one thing, he said, they're lazy about practicing. They don't practice. If I had to perform in Carnegie Hall, the amount of time I would spend practicing piano pieces that I knew perfectly, completely Baal Peh, you know, the younger people don't put in as much time to practicing. And Horowitz then says on the interview, he says, you can't compare somebody that practices the concerto the 101st time over the person that does it merely 100 times. Now, Horowitz was Jewish. He wasn't learned and he wasn't observant. But I wonder if, you know, that you know, was basically parroting the line from the Gemara about the piano practicing. But it's true, certainly for learning. Rava Amar, Im Ra'ita Talmid Shelimudo Kasher Lav Kebarzel, a different interpretation for why somebody might have trouble in learning. If you see someone, if you see a student whose learning is as hard for him as an iron bar, Bishvil Rabbo She'eno Mazbir Lo Panim She'nemar Vahu Lo Panim Kilkel. Here we interpret that pasuk of panim, not the edge of the knife, but the panim, the face. If the Rebbe, if the teacher is not warm, if the teacher is not encouraging to the student, maybe that's the source of the student's trouble. Mai takanta? So what's the solution? How can this be repaired? Yarbe alav re'im. So if he has a teacher who's not giving him the kind of support and encouragement that he needs to succeed in learning, he should find himself some friends. You know, like we say elsewhere, the idea of o chevruta o metuta, right? In other words, friendship, or the kind of friendship that's formed in the pursuit of intellectual endeavors can be very helpful. Right, in other words, you need a study partner. You need friends who are going to encourage you. You need friends who are going to sometimes just, you know, share their class notes with you before the test. That's a very important via, and that's the same. But that's again, we're keeping the same. We're sucking the marrow out of every word in these psukim. Right, we're for each case. You see each of these stitches in the Agadah. It's the same format, it's the same structure, and we keep going back to the same proof texts, but each time we go back to the proof text, we get something else out of it. So here, how do you see this idea that friendship is the solution to a student who's not succeeding in his learning because the teacher is not being supportive enough? The same pasuk, v'chayalim yegaber v'yitaron hachsher chochma, kol shekein im huchsheru ma'asav bifnei rabo mi'ikara. And how much?
Rashi has a slightly different take than the way you're describing it.
Yeah.
He says the fayese menu she is barlo panim. In other words, why does he need these friends? These friends should go
the
and
friends are
going to
be the intermediate. Yeah.
To be nice to him. Yeah. To be nice to him. It's not about the friends being nice to him. It's about they might make a difference and get the rav to be a little bit nicer to him.
But it's also possible to read the Gemara against Rashi and say it has to do with, you know, you'll find it in friendship. You'll find, you remember the paper chase? Remember, what was his name? You remember that movie, The Paper Chase? With John Huston, first year law school. How difficult it is, how grinding it is, how demanding the professor is. And the four friends, the study group, how they get through it together. But yes, it's true. Rashi says that the friends will be intermediaries to the Rebbe. And how much
it makes
more?
Sense. It makes sense also in terms of the continuation here, because, you know, you're saying like it would be better if he didn't have to do it from the beginning, but like friendship isn't something we'd normally say is something we'd want to, like, it's only a bitty ever thing we have to do with friendship, but having friends intercede with the Rav, that could be something we could avoid in the beginning if the Rav was friendlier.
Okay. Enachinami. V'kol shekein, if he got along well with his Rebbe to begin with, that would be useful to his learning. Okay, at this point, the Gemara gets back on track to the topic of rain, and we'll continue from here next week. Okay, Laila Tov.
Shukar, Laila Tov.